I'll be honest, this summer is stacked. Between that one big international soccer tournament, America's 250th anniversary, and the Route 66 centennial, people are going to be traveling. What a lot of folks don't realize is that taking a trip in an RV is a whole heck of a lot more enjoyable than TSA lines or stodgy hotels. And you don't even have to own an RV or drive one to take part. With Outdoorsy, you can rent an RV or camper almost anywhere in the country. You can drive it, tow it, or have it delivered and set up for you. And these aren't bare-bones setups. Many come with full kitchens, bathrooms, showers, and real beds. It's often more affordable than hotels, especially for families or groups. And everything includes insurance, 24/7 support, and roadside assistance. If you're thinking about a summer trip, or just planning ahead for the rest of 2026, get 10% off when you book using promo code OUTDOORSY2026. Head to OUTDOORSY.com. That's OUTDOORSY.com, promo code OUTDOORSY2026.
Hello and welcome to Future Projection. This is episode 171. We've got another mailbag episode on the way. I'm Carlos Glazo, joined by Ben Battler. What's up, Ben?
I'm doing great, Carlos. How about you?
I am good. Ready to roll, ready to get into these questions. Really have enjoyed doing this specific episode of the show. I feel like we've gotten some good feedback as well from listeners. So thank you guys for just letting us know that you appreciate the added content, because we've been trying to level up the podcast. I think this is a fun way to do it, come to you guys twice a week. Also, just a request for your questions. You can email us, futureprojection@pacefulamerica.com. You can contact us on Twitter, futurepropod. Ben's on Twitter at Ben Battler. I'm on Twitter at Carlos A. Galazzo. Similar handles across the spectrum if you want to come at us at different social platforms, and all of those details are in the show notes like they always are. So if you have questions about prospects, if you have thoughts on the scouting process, if you want behind the scenes insight into how we do things at BA, if you just want to chat about baseball, let us know. We're always thrilled to hear from you guys and excited to get into today's question. So Ben, if you don't have anything else to add at the top, we'll go straight in.
Yeah.
We got one from Poldy Bloom on X. Please compare and contrast the trio of young Cardinals shortstops, Padilla, Hernandez, and Dos Santos. Who has the highest upside, the highest floor? Which tools are best for each? Should I, a Cardinals fan, be excited, etc.? Just a general conversation about Latin shortstops here. What you got, Ben?
Yeah, so Yairo Padilla, shortstop for the Cardinals, who was in the FCL for them last year in rookie ball. He's the guy we have rated the highest right now. Left-handed hitter, like really lean frame, good athlete, a lot of arm strength. Hopefully the power comes. Not sure how much is going to come. 73 games so far in pro ball. He's hit one home run, didn't hit any last year, but not super uncommon to see that for, a 18-year-old shortstop signed out of Latin America. But that is going to be one of the questions on him. And he, on the younger end of the class, and then there's a lot of physical projection there. So to be determined if that comes. I actually would not be surprised if Miguel Hernandez, he mentioned, another shortstop they signed, he was in the 2025 class. If he ends up being better than Padilla, he's another guy who's young for the class. He had a good season for himself in the DSL coming out of Venezuela. He had 281, 408, 444. He did hit five home runs last year, which surprised me. I didn't know that he had that kind of strength and power behind his swing, because, when he signed, it was, athletic shortstop, plus runner, really good actions with the hands, the feet, everything looks like at least a middle infielder. Arm strength, is that going to come on a little bit more? Probably no more this year, right? Like, he's still 17 years old. Like, the arm has a chance to continue to get stronger. If that comes, definitely a shortstop. If not, you still have a second baseman. He's another guy. I think he still has to get stronger, but the swing works pretty well. It's pretty good plate coverage, has a good idea of the strike zone. So still a lot of traits to like with him. And then Sebastian Dos Santos, they signed him for $75,000 last year, and he had a great year in the DSL. It was 313, 452, 570. One more walk than strikeout. He hit four home runs too. He's another guy who's got a good glove at shortstop. He's not like your speedy burner plus runner. It's more instincts, anticipation, timing, internal clock, like playing the game more under control, I think, than you would see for a lot of young shortstops coming up. But then also last year, it was again, it was a really good year at the plate. So I think he has a good sense of the strike zone for being able to, recognize breaking balls, put the bat to the ball, switch hitter. Another guy too, like for most of these guys, a lot of the key is just getting stronger. And then like, what kind of power is that able to unlock? Cause he's still a pretty, wiry at best guy. So I think just getting stronger is going to be key for all three of these guys. But I might take Hernandez, the first of that group, but yep. three really good young middle infielders to have for the Cardinals. And you can see the results of their Latin American signings from the last few years. And obviously now, and Manuel Luna, TBD what'll happen with him this year in the DSL, not because I have like major questions or anything, just he hasn't played yet, but right. Big power speed threat that they signed out of the Dominican Republic in the outfield this year. So definitely seems like some of the better international signings coming out of their program that they've had in recent years over the last couple seasons.
Good deal. And no, we are not too concerned by the fact that the Cardinals have a number of really talented and impressive shortstops. I don't
even
know if you saw this, but
they have Mason Wynn.
even though they have Mason Wynn and they have JJ Weatherholt, who I guess maybe we won't be talking about him as a shortstop for too much longer. But do you see how that shortstop logjam has already solidified and answered itself and figured itself out? I had some A's account on Twitter kind of asking like why we had them with a shortstop when they have all these other shortstops already. And it was funny because I think the player was Chris Hacopian. They were talking about who I just think is unlikely to play shortstop at the next level. But we still do get questions from people who are maybe not familiar with the running joke here about why another shortstop? We already have one. But I know listeners of the show appreciate that one.
I think you should have the White Sox pass on Rock Chulowski due to their...
Because they already have some good shortstops.
Due to their shortstop situation. See how that goes.
They really need an arm, yeah. we got an email from Brian who says, love your show. It's my favorite podcast. Keep up the great work and content. My question is about high school prospect Brady Harris. In the years leading up to the 2026 draft cycle, Brady Harris appeared near the top of the rank of the various rankings. However, as we entered the 26th cycle, he seems to be a fringy first rounder. Aside from his poor track record on the summer circuit, what other parts of his profile may have contributed to his lesser ranking given the pedigree? How does his risk level compare to a guy like Kevin Roberts Jr.? Thank you for the email, Brian, and also thank you for the kind words. I always think it's crazy to hear when people say our show is their favorite podcast, so it is very cool to hear that, so just appreciate it. I actually like that he compared Brady Harris and Kevin Roberts Jr. because I think those two players are very similar in a number of ways. They're both younger for the class, especially Kevin Roberts Jr. He'll still be 17 on draft day. They're Florida commits. They are right-handed hitters who have really exciting tool packages and upside. And I think they're both players who are, especially Kevin Roberts, are some of the more polarizing high school players in this year's class. And I feel like I get a lot of Dylan Cruz vibes with Brady Harris and just his overall like track throughout the years we've been covering him. I mean, Ben, you probably saw him when he was at his best as an underclassman, but this is a guy who has tremendous bat speed and raw power. He's been a plus runner. He can play impressive defense in center field. He has a plus arm. And so I think all those tools are generally still there. But to Brian's point in the email, he really struggled over the summer. He had a number of chances to perform and just didn't. He struggled with spin in a pretty significant way. And so I think the biggest reason why Brady Harris is slipping a bit is because there are just questions about his pure hitting ability from the industry. And he faces the same sort of right high school outfield questions that Dylan Cruz did at the time. And if you struggle there and you don't really like cement your hitting chops, there are going to be a lot of teams who just want you to go to college and prove it. It wouldn't surprise me if Brady Harris wound up doing the same thing. I think Kevin Roberts Jr., a lot of what I just said could probably be said for him as well. There are some differences. He's a lot bigger physically. I think that maybe he has even more raw power potential. There is maybe some defensive versatility there. He's playing shortstop now. I don't think he's a long-term shortstop. Maybe he can play third, but he has a really big arm as well. And so I think for both these guys, they're toolsy, right, likely outfield profiles who teams are going to be really torn on pure hitting ability. And that's kind of where you're going to get the pessimism in the profiles when you're getting it. What are your thoughts on these two, Ben?
Yeah, both guys who hit really well as underclassmen too. In Brady Harris's case, yeah, I think teams still like him a lot. And I don't know if it's so much go to school and prove it as much as it's going to be, okay, like with both these players, what is going to be the asking price
right.
to not go to school? Because if
they're both Florida commits.
Yeah, both Florida commits. You know, Brady Harris is from Florida and has been committed to Florida since he was like 8 years old or whatever. You know, I'm exaggerating, but you know, he's been committed there for a long time. I think like maybe they could both end up being first round picks, and it wouldn't surprise me. It also wouldn't surprise me if teams wanted to draft them right after the first round and the second round, and then it depends. Okay, if they think, like, if Brady Harris thinks I'm going to be a first round pick after college, the way, you know, the guy at UCLA is doing it right now, that's you know, whether to that level or not, but hey, I'll be a first round pick after college. I'll go to my dream school for 3 years, and then I'll get paid, you know, $5 or $6 million after that. Then yeah, I'll just go to school and go that route. Unless you want to give me, you know, I'm totally just making up a number for sake of example, because these guys haven't put out prices yet or anything like that. It's too early in the process. Yep. But you know, if a kid says, you know, I want $4 million, well, you know, by the time it gets to the after the first round, it's hard to give that kind of money to a player. So like that's just the kind of stuff that happens every year in the draft. And yeah, I think all the tools and upside and middle of the field profile is there still for Brady Harris. Like I still like him quite a bit. But yeah, I mean, he did have like an up and down, just struggled right in the summer, and he went to Jupiter, and you know, he went 0 for 15 at Jupiter. Hasn't been like crazy swing and miss with him. Like that, if that was a big red flag, that would be more alarming for me, but it hasn't been like crazy strikeouts or crazy like swinging and missing through everything that he's seeing or anything like that. So guys can just have down summers or downfalls and come back, and hey, everybody wishes they drafted a guy after he gets to school, but especially when you're in a draft that's as good as this draft is, they're
right.
Just guys have kind of jumped ahead of him for at this point.
Yep. And like getting priced out happens for these sort of elite level tool set high school players. And there's just not enough money in the draft to sign all these players. I think to your point, like there'd be a lot of teams who'd be interested in signing him after the first round. But at that point, the numbers get a little bit dicier.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent spent your life working for. My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real, tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Okay, let's get into our next one. We got another question from Mark on X. He says, will Mets shortstop Elian Pena be a top 25 prospect this time next year? Any thoughts on this one, Ben?
I am a big Elian Pena fan. I mean, he's the shortstop the Mets signed for $5 million and then after that first week or week and change where he had like one hit in his first 20-something at-bats or whatever, 30-something at-bats, maybe whatever it was, or plate appearances. After that, he was great. I mean, you look at the final numbers. He's one of the best hitters, period, in the DSL. Certainly one of the best hitters for his age, being 17 years old in that league, and one of the best prospects overall in that league. Will he be a top 25 prospect this time next year? I don't know. Like, look at our top 25 right now. how many guys go from the year after being in the DSL to being a top 25 prospect in baseball? All right, Jesus Made is there. That's about it, right? So I don't see him getting to that level. Like, and he's not Jesus Made. I don't think he's not that kind of hitter. I mean, even the power, I have the advantage. Like, Made probably has the advantage on everything with Elian Pena. And I say that liking Elian Pena a lot. Could he be a top 100 prospect? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a really, really good left-handed swing. I mean, he does get a little bit uphill sometimes, but I think it just has the swing itself is pretty compact. Just a lot of good hitting attributes with him, bat to ball skills, has good knowledge of the strike zone. Defensively, yeah, all right, he's been playing shortstop. I don't expect him to stay there. We'll see what it looks like this season. Guys can take big jumps when they're going from, you know, 17 to 18, but generally speaking, like, you just look at the quickness, the range, the body, like, everything kind of points toward him being a third baseman, which is what you really were expecting at the time he signed anyway. So it doesn't really change all that much. Like, if you were expecting him to, like, go out and be Andrelton Simmons at shortstop or, you know, some plus defender, then okay, I get it. Like, you're probably going to be disappointed, but that shouldn't be the expectation for him. Like, everything, not everything, but, you know, you're banking on the calling card with him, which is the combination of hitting ability and power. So I think he has a chance to be top 100, certainly top 25. I'd be very surprised.
Yeah, I was going to just say this profile, it just feels a little bit surprising. I think a ton would have to go really well for him to jump to top 25 at this time next year for basically all the reasons that you said, Ben. So that would be pretty surprising to me, but cool for the Mets, I guess, if it did happen. But I wouldn't bet on that. Okay, we got another one from Will on Instagram who asks, with Carlos's experience on TV, what changes would y'all make to the draft presentation? This is kind of a fun one. I feel like for me personally, I would probably be a bad person for the people in charge of the draft broadcast to ask what we would change to the draft, because I feel like for me and for Baseball America and our audience, I feel like it would just be a much more granular, like, scouting report style show with a lot more film of what, like, the players actually on the field. And I would have less interest in a lot of the off the field, like, human interest stories, interviews with the, like, I think the interviews can sometimes be cool if you have a really personable player at the draft. But I often just think sometimes those are kind of awkward, both for the player and for the people trying to ask insightful questions. So for me, I really like getting into the weeds on, like, who these players are, what they do, why scouts like them, what their potential roles are, what the question marks might be, like, basically getting way more into, like, what we do here on future prediction. I also acknowledge like the same sort of conversations that work in a long form podcast format are maybe not the best for a TV broadcast. And I don't know.
Yeah, you missed eight picks, Carlos. They just went by as you were talking about.
I mean, we would have no issue with timing to talk about these players in depth because the first round in particular can be a real slog. I mean, once we get into the rapid fire 1 minute per pick, we kind of do that. It's basically just like me, Jim, Dan really quickly talking about like, what's this player? What's the tool set? Boom, on to the next one. Like there's not enough time for all the human element, human interest pieces. But I just feel like, I guess in the first round conversations, I feel like there's a lot more that can be said about the player's profile and interesting conversations about comparing and contrasting the players who went around them. Like really a lot of this stuff here, I like how in depth we can get. Again, is that the best change for a TV broadcast like the draft, which is probably trying to appeal to as many casual fans as they can? I don't necessarily know. I'm curious what you think, Ben, as someone who actually gets like, because I see the broadcast up and I like have, for those who don't know, like I've got a earpiece and I can like hear the actual broadcast, but I feel like it is a very different experience actually being able to watch the draft unfold versus being there kind of prepping in between picks, hearing producers in your ear. Like it's just a different experience. So I can't fully take it in with like an unbiased perspective. So.
Yeah, I will say with the caveat that my full attention span is not on the draft broadcast itself as the draft is going on. Cause I'm
yeah, cause you're doing work on the draft
analysis right, and right. try to just come up right. with my own thoughts. It's more just like almost background noise, which sounds a little strange just to keep up right. with all the picks and hear what's going on the MLB Network show. But I think the broadcast is at its best when it just respects its audience. And I think that's true of live games too, right? Like you see live games sometimes where it's like, is this supposed to be a talk show where the game is right. kind of getting in the way of you guys yapping right. at each other? Or can we maybe focus on the game? Like, I don't need to hear
less yapping for me in the future. That's what you're saying, Ben.
Well, I don't need to hear you or any other announcers like diatribe where they are, you know, wish the game was the same as when they played 30 years ago or whatever.
Right.
Like, just keep the focus on the game itself. And I don't look at with live games. I get it. Like sometimes that's a, you know, an 11-2 game in the seventh inning. I get it. But with the draft broadcast itself, yeah, when you respect the audience, which I don't think is there as a mostly casual fan audience. Yeah. Like, I don't think casual fans generally are just like tuning into the MLB yeah. draft broadcast to hear
right.
which high school player your team is going to take, who you're not going to see for like 3 or 4 years, if ever mm-hmm. at all. Like, I just don't think that's what right. happens. So, And I think it's very evident to an audience when somebody is like a draft native versus a draft tourist. So I think it's at its best when it's not just you, but like you or Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo, where you guys are clearly all in on the draft all mm-hmm. year round. Like, this is what you do. You know these players inside and out. And I think it's good too when, you know, he's obviously not going to be on this year, but like Tony Vitello, I think brings a good element to the broadcast yep. because he like managed like a ton of the player, coached a ton of the players.
First round of the year ago.
Yeah, yeah. In the first round or coached against them in the SEC right. or there were his recruits coming in, right? So he knows mm-hmm. these players extremely well. And he's also not just out there speaking coach speak either. Like he's
right.
very candid, maybe too candid right. sometimes. He just lets it roll and he's very entertaining. Whereas like, you know, when you bring in, I think there's this network inclination to just like bring in as many ex-players as they can to have people familiar faces and all that. And it's mm-hmm. like, I don't know, maybe they have better data than I do. But to me, when I watch it and when I see just the reaction from other people, you can tell when somebody's like just kind of floating in for a draft broadcast and sort of not as prepared as the way that how could they be as prepared as you and Callis and Mayo when you guys are doing this year round, and you guys are all good on TV anyway. So to me, like when you guys are on with the host, like the more airtime you guys get, I'm not saying this to like flatter you or anything, like don't get me wrong. I'm just saying, you know, you guys are the ones
who this, Ben.
You guys are the ones who know these players the best. That's who people want to hear from, is the experts who know these players best. So like the interview stuff is fine to me. Like if I'm obviously like some of them are pretty bland and boring, and the high school players,
I just am always very nervous that it's just going to be an uncomfortable conversation just because it's like awkward. And if they're not there, there's the tech delay and issues. Right. And I'm always just like, I hope you don't like look foolish here on this like biggest day of your life. But it obviously makes a lot of sense that you would want to interview the players on the draft. So I get that. And MLB really is trying to get as many players as they can to actually be at the draft. And they've had mixed results with that. So
it's in Philly this year, right?
Yeah, Philly. I'm very excited for this one because it sounds like Philly's going to go all out. Big anniversary for the country, obviously historic city, back on the East Coast. I don't think we've had a draft. I lied. Last year it was in Atlanta. So we're back on the East Coast. It's been...
ever since last year. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a lot of West Coast trips, but... Yeah,
first All-Star game and in his home state for Kevin McGonigal, potentially.
No guarantee. That would be a lot of fun, huh? Didn't even think of that element. I can always count on you to have the Kevin McGonigal element ready to go. Okay, I'm curious though, our listeners, because our listeners are like who I'm most plugged into and interested in. Obviously, like, what do you guys like or dislike about the draft, how it's presented? Because I do feel like it's hard for me to kind of get a great feel, because I'm so just tapped into, I know our audience very much cares about these like very in-depth nitty gritty conversations about the players. So yeah, I'm just curious what y'all think about the draft as well. So those are my thoughts. I think your thoughts are good to hear as well, Ben. So appreciate that. I think those were all the questions we had today for the mailbag, but again, throw us your questions at any point. We throw them here in our show sheet and make sure we're tracking them, so you don't have to worry about throwing them in too early or too late. We'll get to them if they're interesting to talk through and we feel like we have some insight to offer or provide. So fun to do these. Any closing remarks or comments, Ben? Now, you hate when I ask you this, but I can't not.
I have no closing statement. No.
No closing remarks. Okay. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Appreciate you supporting the show. Appreciate you supporting Baseball America. For Ben, I'm Carlos. We will see you next time. So long.